Hello, Twins fans. This is John Swole from TwinsTrivia.com, and I would like to welcome you to yet another interview with a player from the Twins' wonderful past. Today, we have the privilege of speaking with the 1979 American League Rookie of the Year, John Castino. John is a Twins lifer, having spent his entire career in the Minnesota Twins organization. John was originally signed by the Twins in 1976 and made his Major League debut on opening day in 1979 in Oakland. At the end of his first season, John was named co-winner of the American League Rookie of the Year Award along with Toronto's Alfredo Griffin. So let's jump right in and get started. So John, I believe you grew up and attended high school in Winnetka, Illinois. What sports did you play in high school and what was your favorite sport?
Yes, I grew up actually in a little town called Kenilworth and went to a high school in Winnetka, Illinois called Nurture East High School. Great, wonderful school. A big high school, close to 5,000 students in four grades, 9 through 12. I played all three of the major sports at that time in Chicago were basketball, baseball, and football. And my favorite was probably football and then basketball, maybe a tie first for first with basketball, football, and baseball. It was my least favorite.
Wow.
And, I mean, I liked it, but just, you know, trying to play baseball in the spring and Northern Illinois is very similar to playing in Minnesota in the spring, and we would play in sometimes snow flurries, and it would be raining and cold, and baseball is not that much fun to play when it's 35, 40 degrees outside, and you're trying to hit a baseball, and your hands are frozen, so I really fell in love with baseball once I went to college in Florida at Rollins College. That's really what drove my love for the game of baseball.
Well, you went to Rollins College in, what, 74 to 76. How did you end up there?
I got a full scholarship ride to Rollins, and the unique thing about Rollins, and actually Florida Southern, too, offered me the same deal, which is a small town in Lakeland, kind of a sister city from Orlando, about an hour drive. Both really nice schools, wonderful coaches. In both schools allowed me the opportunity to play either baseball or basketball and retain my full scholarship. So I thought that was a very unique offer, and it was very kind of them to do that. And so I just ended up choosing Rollins. The coach at Rollins College was Boyd Coffey, and he really won me over and had become a close friend, too, throughout my life and his until he passed away a couple years ago.
Mm. I see. What kind of a baseball team did you have at Rollins, and what position did you play there?
We had a good team at Rollins. We were one of my years, let's see, my sophomore year, we were one game away from going to the College World Series.
Wow,
and,
nice.
It was Division II baseball, but we played all the Division I teams. We played University of Miami, University of Florida, Florida State, Clemson, some of the Big Ten schools, Michigan and Notre Dame. Other schools would come down and play us, Ohio State. So we played lots of Division I schools. And we had a pretty good team. We always had a winning record, and I think a lot of it had to do with our coach. We always had good money, baseball money, to get good scholarship athletes there. And it was a good education as well, so I think people that were serious about getting a college degree and playing ball, Rollins was a great choice. It's a wonderful, wonderful school. Two of my three kids went to Rollins undergrad, and my third is getting his master's degree from there, so we have a very close relationship still with Rollins.
Oh, that's nice. If I remember correctly, the Twins used to play the Rollins Tars as their first spring training game each year for several years. Did you ever play in any of those games?
You have a great memory. I played in every game that I was at the Rollins. For 3 years, I went to Rollins because the Twins drafted me after my junior year. And so I played against the Twins, and as a Rollins College Tar was our nickname, T-A-R, the Sailors. So, and that's actually where the Twins kind of saw me play a few times and started their scouting.
I think you were drafted in the third round of the 76 amateur draft. Were you expecting to be drafted by the Twins, and how did you hear that the Twins first drafted you?
You know, no one really has any idea who's going to draft you because the scouts are there, and sometimes the scouts work for different teams, maybe several teams at once, sometimes only one team, but junior year, although I still, I think, led the state of Florida in home runs. I was actually a power hitter in college, believe it or not, which I wasn't in the pros. Using aluminum bats made quite a difference. And so I didn't really know who I was going to go to, and I found out when I was in the summer, I came home after the junior year, came home, I was painting my next-door neighbor's house, and had the radio on, and I heard my name announced over the radio as far as being drafted by the Twins, you know, local, future kid, John Castillo, drafted by the Minnesota Twins in the third round. So I had no idea if I was going to get drafted highly or low. I did have a pretty good sense that I would get drafted because I was All-American for a couple of years there. And like I said, I was MVP of the state of Florida 1 year. So I had enough publicity at least to get noticed.
That's kind of unusual that they didn't call you, though, or at least right away.
No. Well, after I was drafted, they did.
Okay.
After I was drafted, then they called me right away, and Angelo Giuliani came down, who's also passed on, wonderful Italian guy. He came down and knocked at the front door, and my dad answered, and Angelo started speaking Italian. So my dad, being Castino, would know some Italian, and my dad thought he was somebody looking for some landscaping work or something when he came to the door. And Angelo had to explain himself, and everybody got a good laugh out of it, and then I went ahead and signed with the Twins.
That's a great story. Are you interested in sharing any of the details about your signing bonus or what your first professional contract was like?
Yeah, that's nothing there to be ashamed of or proud of or to boast about. It was $21,000 signing bonus, but it was paid over a couple of years, and it wasn't that much. No, that was actually my rookie year salary was $21,000. My bonus was $15,000, and I think I got $7,000 up front and then $8,000 the next year, and I ended up buying a little pickup truck that would get me through the minor leagues, basically. It was what I spent the bonus on, and then, of course, you get... Back then, you started with $500 a month salary. That's only when you played, and then you got $7 a day meal money when you traveled. So I'm glad to eat that good diet while you're in the minor leagues. Believe me, you would always lose money every time you play. Every month you play in the minor leagues, you lose money.
Yeah, you'd almost have to if you only got the $7 meal money and.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's different today. I'm not sure what it is. It's got to be over 20, I would guess, today. But you never know. It's been a long time since I've been in the minor leagues, and I haven't talked to any of the guys to see what it's like now. But, the bus rides were very difficult. But, if you love something and you love doing something, none of that stuff mattered. It was fun. It was adventurous. It was something different. It was a new challenge. And it was very exciting for me. I really thoroughly enjoyed the minor leagues.
Yeah. And that was going to be my next question. Was you had spent some time with Wisconsin Rapids and in 76, and then you moved down to Visalia in Orlando. And I just wanted to get what your thoughts were of playing in the minor leagues. A number of players that I've talked with, some really enjoyed it, and others just were glad to be through it and move on.
Well, I think it was a great experience. I think it'd be nice if everyone could have an opportunity to love to do something so much that they really have a sense of adventure and excitement and a challenge that thrilled them. But at the same time, you have a lot of sacrifices to make that were like living conditions and travel conditions and, like I said, no money to speak of to live on. You don't get a whole lot of sleep, and you're rooming with somebody different every month because he's going to be gone the next month, and so it's somewhat chaotic. You're moved around quite a bit. I had to drive actually from Orlando one time, and through the middle of the season, I went from Orlando to Visalia, California.
Wow, that's a drive.
Well, the Twins gave me 4 days to get there, and that's like 4 straight days of driving.
Sure it is.
It's not glamorous at all. But again, I think it was a wonderful experience for me. It made me appreciate the life in the big leagues. But like I said, it also gives you an opportunity to hone your skills. And believe me, if you don't at least start out with a love for the game, you're not going to last long. I saw a lot of guys that had talent for baseball, more talent than a lot of the guys in the big leagues, but they just didn't know how to manage themselves through the minor leagues, either partied too much or just got down at themselves because of that bothered me the most about going to the minor leagues versus college was, in college, everybody's pulling for themselves, pulling for the team, and it's easy to do because you want to get to the College World Series and have some fun. You get into the minor leagues, and, you know, they might only take one or two players from that team to move up to the next level. And that's
sure.
Here. There might be one infielder and one outfielder. So you're competing with your own teammates to go to the next level. And it made it much more cutthroat, much more inter-team competitive, and therefore less enjoyable in many ways. But again, it's still a good experience. It toughened you. It honed your skills. And it taught you how to deal with a lot of failures as well as successes.
Yeah, I'm sure. You touched on the travel, and, you know, you hear a lot of stories about how tough the travel was in a southern league. Do you remember that?
Oh, my gosh, do I remember that? Yeah, we would, finish a game in Orlando, for example. I played for the Orlando Twins 1.5 summers. And then after the night game, you'd get on the bus and drive all night, and then half the next day and get into, let's say, Chattanooga or Knoxville, Tennessee, or Nashville, any of those towns, or Montgomery, Alabama. I think Nashville and Knoxville are the longest one. And then you'd have to play a game that same day. And when you get there, you'd throw your suitcase in the hotel room. You'd maybe get there 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon the next day. You might get a chance to lay down in the hotel room for an hour and a half or 2 hours, and then you either jump on the bus or walk to the baseball stadium to play another game. So you have to learn how to sleep on the bus or you're going to have trouble. So I said that's probably what I meant when I said earlier, you have to understand how to manage yourself through the minor leagues.
Yeah, that's a lot of driving and riding, boy, that's for sure.
Oh, I remember we had a bus driver, I won't mention his name, but he was a big, big man and well over 300 pounds. And, you know, back in the minor league, they didn't hire they didn't pay people a lot, so they would just pretty much get who they could get to either drive your bus or do whatever, or clean the locker rooms or you name it, but we all knew that he was an alcoholic, and so we would have to, he would be sweating, and we always thought he was going to pass out or have a heart attack at the driving wheel. So some guys would go up there and sneak in beers and stuff while he was driving us overnight just to keep him awake, to keep him from fainting or having a heart attack because he was sweating so bad. So it's amazing to me that some of the teams would not invest enough to take care of the investment they had in their players. Now it's hard for the force management to understand all the things that go on in the minor leagues, but there are a lot of eye-opening things there.
I bet. Boy, that's interesting. When was the first
time? It's a different world now, though, isn't it? Obviously, you couldn't say a story like that today. It wouldn't happen today, but back then, remember, in the 70s, late 70s, a lot of things happened that that don't happen today.
Yeah, that's for sure. When was the first time that the Twins invited you to spring training with the big club, and what was that experience like for you?
Well, I was fortunate. The first time they invited me was the first year that I went to the big leagues. So I only experienced one, my first one was when I went to the big league Twins. So it was a great experience. Gene Mock was the manager. I was a little bit nervous, but not really. I mean, I had a strong faith in God that I was either going to make it or not, and it was in God's hands, and there's not much I could do about it other than play well and play as hard as I could. So Gene Mock made me understand that I was a long shot coming in, and that was fine. I just wanted a shot at it, and made some good plays at third, got a few hits, and all of a sudden he said to me about a week before we broke camp, he said, Rook, he called me Rook then because I was a rookie and he didn't know what else to call me. I looked so young, just 24 years old, I looked like I was 18. You know, skinny little kid. He goes, Rook, he says, you're going with us. He said, you're going to need a blazer. Do you have one or a sport coat? I said, no, I don't have one. He says, you're going to need one. So he said, you're coming north with us. And I thought that was real exciting for me, and I just had a blast.
That's great. You know, it's funny because my next question was going to be, how did you find out that you had made the team? And that's a great story.
It was exciting for me, and probably going to ask about the experiences. My rookie year experiences were just so exciting. My favorite was when we went for the first time back to Chicago, where I grew up, and we were playing the White Sox, my very, very first game back to Chicago as a Twin. And my brother Roger, manager had rented a couple of school buses and some kegs of beer, and all my friends and his friends, we were at similar age. We played football together at Neutra High School, and so we had a lot of similar friends, and my brother Tommy, and, you know, there's nine kids in my family, so they all had friends, and two busloads of people and lots of cars and hundreds of tickets, and of which I had to get, not had to, but of which I got almost 60 tickets. I got borrowed all the tickets, the free passes from my teammates. They didn't know anybody in Chicago, so I took all of theirs. And so we had hundreds of people there. They had a sign that we were walking around Comiskey, the old Comiskey Park, saying, "When Johnny comes marching home," and they were marching that around the stadium. And I just happened to have, by coincidence or by fate, probably the best game I've ever had in the big leagues, with a 4-for-4 night with a home run and I think at least 3, maybe 4 diving catches and plays to, you know, throw guys out at first on a diving play. So it was just an amazing experience.
Well, you can't beat that.
You couldn't beat that. And it came after a really good, probably the worst day I ever had was in Milwaukee with the Brewers the previous day when Gene Mock threatened to send me to the minor leagues. So, and I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't make an error or anything, but it's kind of a story if you want to hear it, I could tell you. But so he, you know, he threatened, you know, Castino, he says, or Rook, he said, I'm going to send you back to, send you down to Toledo, AAA, which I'd never been to before, AAA, I skipped AAA. And I said, Gene, you know, you can send me anywhere you want, but I said, ultimately, oh, and he says, you know, you won't be in the big leagues. And I said, Gene, it's not up to you whether I'm in the big leagues or not. So there's a man upstairs that has a lot more power on whether or not I'm in the big leagues. You have the power whether or not I stay with the Twins. And he kind of looked at me and kind of shocked that nobody, I don't think anyone really talked to him like that before. And I think the next day I explained what I meant by it so he could figure it out, that I had enough faith in God that one way or another, if God wanted me to be there, I'd be there, and if he didn't, I wouldn't be there. But it had nothing to do with Gene Mock or anybody else, although I appreciated him giving me the opportunity. So anyway, the next game, I had that game, and I think that showed him and me that I was supposed to stay there.
Mm-hmm. Well, in like your first or second game, I think you were brought in to pinch run, I think, and from what I understand, you were picked off of first base.
How do you know all this stuff? Where do you hear all this?
Well, I do my research on my questions and so forth.
I can't believe how much you know. There's nobody that knows this kind of stuff. My wife didn't even know this kind of stuff. But it's true. I was in Oakland. It was our first series, and we platooned. Mike Kubich was platooning at third with me, and I only played against left-handed pitchers in the beginning of the season. And there weren't any lefties in Oakland. So I was on the bench for 3 games, and the third game, I think it was, whatever it was, I can't remember which, but one of the games in the Oakland series, he put me in the pinch run for somebody, and he put the steal sign on, and it was fairly cold there, and I said, oh, crap. In baseball, it's not like football. You can run up and down the sidelines to get loose. He just kind of threw me in there last second. And I was cold and stiff, and I go, there's no way I can steal a base unless I really cheat on this leadoff. So I tried to get a good jump, and they picked me off, and he was not happy about that. He didn't say a word. He just glared at me, and that was it. That was Gene's way lots of times. He didn't say a whole lot, but he used a lot of stares.
Interesting.
And then I went to Anaheim. The very next series was in Anaheim against the Angels, and my first game that I played, I did get a base hit, my second at bat in the big league. So that took the pressure off as far as, you know, making some things happen.
That was a pretty good pitcher, too. Frank Tanana, I think?
That's right. Frank Tanana. And that's exactly right.
Pretty good. Gene Mock was the Twins manager back in 79, and yet that, you know, almost the entire starting lineup, I think, was between the ages of 23 and 26. Mm-hmm. What was it like to play for a manager like Gene Mock?
There were some pluses, and like all managers, there were some minuses. And there were some different type managers that I had throughout my life, but including the Twins. Gene was one of the more stern managers. He was a brilliant manager, knew the technical parts of the game better than anybody or as well as anybody in the game. But he wasn't really a player's manager, in my opinion, at least not with the Twins. I think once he got with the Angels, he knew he had the talent. He could relax, just let those guys go out there and have fun and play. But we were, like you said, we were young and we made mistakes, and I think he had trouble just letting us develop and letting us do our thing. to him.
Sure.
I think I eventually gained his respect, and I don't think so. I know so because he told me as much. And so we gained mutual respect for each other as the season went on, I think is the best way to put it. So I enjoyed it. That was also a good experience because, like I said, you need to have that. I had coaches like that in football in high school. I had other coaches kind of the opposite way in other sports. So I had experience of coaches all around. I think Tom Kelly, from what I've seen, is the best. I had Tom as a third base coach while I was playing with the Twins for the last 3 years that I played. Tom Kelly had the best instincts of any baseball person I'd ever seen. And he would know when to do a pitch out or hit and run, or he knew how to handle players as far as let them do their thing, but he also knew when to rein them in. His instincts were absolutely unsurpassed.
Really? To me, not knowing either one of them, obviously, either Mock or Kelly, to me, they seemed a lot alike. And, Kelly always seemed really grumpy to me.
He was to the media. He certainly did not like the media. And he liked the fans, but, he's not, he just, people thought that he was grumpy, but he just didn't enjoy those types of things. He enjoyed being on the field. And if you could be with him on the bench, and you could see how much he enjoyed managing and pulling the strings and pushing the buttons and hit and run here or pitch out there, I mean, that's really what turned him on. And the players knew how much he loved that, and he also knew which players played hard for him and which ones didn't. And you respected him because he would get on anybody that would not hustle or not do their thing or make a mental error. Physical errors didn't bother him. It was a mental error. So I think Tom Kelly was just amazing for the players. I can't tell you what he's like for the fans or the media. Although he brought a World Series championship, and that's a couple of them. So I think that's good enough.
Yeah, we spend February and March down in Cape Coral, which is, next to Fort Myers. So I spend quite a bit of time at spring training the last few years. And you watch Kelly out there, and, I mean, he's doing everything. He's out there hitting, doing infield. He's out there with his rake, raking the baselines. And he seems to be having just a fun time. He interacts with the fans who are standing by and watching. He just seems totally different down there than what he was,
Well, sure. There's no pressure now at all. So, you're not expected to win. You don't have to worry about making lineups and doing this and that. And so, yeah, he's just got nothing to do but to now enjoy himself. And I think that's why he retired at I think a young age.
Yeah.
He's going to continue to manage for quite a long time. And really, pretty much any team he wanted in the major leagues. I think he had had enough of the travel, the stress, and the pressure, and just wanted to enjoy himself. Believe me, it's a lot easier to know, to enjoy yourself when you know you're not responsible for 25 players and 4 or 5 coaches, and their not only their performance but their behavior. That's a lot of things to be responsible for and still enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
So now all he has to do is worry about himself and have fun talking to the players, and he doesn't have to worry about all the other political stuff that the front office is asking him to do, or PR stuff, or a speech here or there. I mean, he can now just live the way he wants to live and show up when he wants to show up, and I think he's really enjoying himself.
Yeah, he sure seems to in spring training. You, in that 79 team, you guys, like you say, you finished about 500, and you were voted the American League Rookie of the Year along with Alfredo Griffin. How would you assess your first season in the big leagues?
I would have loved to have played the whole season through. I did play most of it, but again, Gene Mock liked to platoon players. He did that at second base, too, as well as third base. And then Roy Smalley was a switch hitter, so he didn't need to do it there. And I would have liked to play right away, but I totally understood Mike Cubbage was a starting third baseman against righties. He was a left-handed hitter.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I got in full-time was because Mike got hit in the face with a baseball. It really messed him up, and I got my opportunity to play well, and then I took over that spot, and I stayed the starter. So I didn't have an opportunity to get 500 at-bats, 500-600 at-bats, which I would love to have gotten. I got 300-something. I think my defense was, if I can say so, was as good as you can possibly play. I think I was covering more ground than I felt any third baseman ever covered because I was in such great shape and my back wasn't hurting me at that point. as much as most. So I think I did what I had to stay in the lineup offensively. And then when I really started to feel better offensively with my second year, because I had a weightlifting program in the offseason, I realized I was a little bit weak, wasn't strong enough in the big league to hit more doubles, triples, and home runs. So I spent the offseason then lifting weights. Then I came back the second year and had a lot more success offensively, hitting 13 home runs instead of 5. But the league in triples, one of those years, either 80 or 80, I don't know, one of those years, 81.
81, yeah.
And then, I had 20-something doubles and led the team in runs scored and RBI. So I had batting average of 302. So that showed me how important it was to get stronger in the upper body, and that really helped.
During the 1980 season, Gene Mock resigned and John Gorrell became the Twins manager. What do you remember about that time?
I remember a lot of it, and I love Johnny Gorrell. He's my fishing buddy in Orlando when I used to live in Orlando in the off season, and Johnny was one of my minor league managers, so we knew each other very well. We were all disappointed that Gene quit on us or resigned. He said he had had his gut full of losing and couldn't deal with it anymore. Well, he forgot, I think, that we were losing too, and it wasn't easy for us to deal with. And I blame part of it. I gave Kevin Griffin a lot of the blame for, letting a lot of good players go. The Heisels, the Bostocks, the Carews, the
sure.
This and that. So, when we get somebody pitching well like Jeff Zahn, then he went free agency, and Dave Golds got traded to the Dodgers because his salary was getting too high. And, it's just there's no way that all of those young guys, unless you kept them, at some point, like finally they did when they kept Herbeck, Gaetti, because Bowen had the money to keep them. We always had good talent, but then they would trade away or let go free agents of talent, and then we have to start all over. So it was a very frustrating experience. I think Gene got frustrated at that, but so did the players, too. And I think a couple of times Calvin, I love Calvin, by the way, gave me opportunity, and we've had a lot of good talks, he and I. We also, had face-to-face conversations a few times. And I told Calvin, he blamed it on the players. And I told him we had kind of a grudge match in the press. You know how the press gets you into things. And they start wanting to cause trouble. And I understand that's part of their business to get headlines. So they asked Calvin how he felt about the team. And he said he was the biggest bunch of losers he's ever been associated with, something like that. And then, of course, they went to me, who was the team captain at the time. Well, what do you say to that? And I kind of said, in a flippant way, I said, well, I'm not responsible for building the team. You'd have to ask Mr. Griffith that one. So that kind of obviously said that he's responsible because he built the team. And so it kind of went back and forth, well, which was stupid. But those things happen when you're losing. And my point is that all the players hurt as much as anybody. And we wanted to keep some of that talent around, but the ownership wouldn't. So I don't know if there was a whole lot more that the players could do if you just keep bringing up young players and or keep trading for players that are have low salaries. What are you going to expect to have as a record at the end of the year? I didn't think it was that hard to add up the math.
Yeah. You mentioned Lyman Bostock's name. When he died at such a young age after he left the Twins, what do you remember about him?
Well, actually, I didn't play with Lyman. He left the year before, so did Carew and Heisel, all three of those guys who were there in 76, 7, or 8. And most of those years, I just knew of them watching their careers. And then I would come up and they go, oh, geez, if we had Heisel, bases would have been cleared. We had to pinch hit so-and-so, was hitting 238, to try to get those runs in. So, I don't know. I didn't know them personally, other than playing against Carew and playing against Heisel. But Bostock was like you said, passed on by then. So I didn't know any of them personally. I just knew that we need more talent around, and it would have been great if they kept some of them.
Yeah. In 1981, the Twins again changed managers, letting Johnny Gorrell go and bringing in Billy Gardner. What kind of impact does that have on a team when that you get a change like that in the middle of the season?
Things weren't going well, so I totally understand how the ownership needs to make a change, even if it wasn't the manager's fault, because you just need to shake things up. Just recently where the Cowboys fired Phillips and they brought in whoever the the guy's name is, but he did a good job. The players had they had somebody new to play for. They had a little bit more energy, and so sometimes management does that, not to really fault the manager, but to shake things up. I thought it was a waste of time, though, just because, again, you didn't have the talent of a team to have a lot of winning games, seasons. And I was criticized for saying that, even by my own players. I was criticized. I remember Danny Goodwin, who I liked a lot, and I think we liked each other as teammates. You know, they had got wind that I said in the papers that we weren't talented enough to be expected to win a title. And then we had a team meeting after that at Detroit, I'll never forget, and playing the Tigers. And some guys aired out their thoughts about what I said, and I said, you know, I can't help what I feel. They said, I think we're playing as hard as we could play. And then somebody said, well, we just have to play harder. I said, you know, playing harder doesn't mean playing smarter. Playing harder doesn't mean playing better. I said, I can't play harder as far as hustling, and I think I'm applying myself at the plate as much as I can. I said, what we need is some more power in the lineup and some, you know, more established starting pitchers and a closer, and then we can contend for a title. And so I remember the team being kind of split at that point. And it was because a lot of it was because of the manager changes, a lot of it was because of losing. And so, but sometimes they make a change in manager, and even a trade of a player is a good thing for the team if done properly. Randy Moss leaving the Vikings. Hmm. Who knows if that was a plus or minus, but Childress took a chance and did that. And he'll have to work with it. I don't know if things are going too well for Brad right now, but if they beat the Panthers, I think things will start to get better as well.
Yeah, they're really struggling this year. It's amazing.
They are. Now, the Twins, Twins are riding high right now, but they finished the season on a low with the straight losses against in the playoffs. So now they're going to have to have at least a decent year again this year. You're going to see a lot of grumbling and moaning because they've actually got a good, pretty high salary, team salary.
Absolutely. Well, why do they always lose to the Yankees?
I think a lot of it is mystique. I think the Twins don't have any real good leadership, everyday leadership. Jim Thome's a great leader, good guy, veteran. But I think Morneau and Mauer need to get a few more years under their belt and get some playoff success in order to have that confidence to lead the rest of their teammates. And so I'm hoping, I really, really hope the Twins can get in the playoffs again, because with the talent they have, anything can happen in the playoffs. You saw that with the Twins. Sure. Not having the best records in the regular season and winning two World Series. That can happen, absolutely. It can happen quite a bit.
Yeah, it's just frustrating. I thought this year that they could get by the Yankees, but it just didn't happen.
Well, I think when Morneau didn't come back, I thought that was kind of a spark that the other players were looking for. It didn't happen, and I think that's what the part of the letdown was.
And that whole Morneau situation, you know, it was kind of funny because we had taken we like to drive to an away park every now and then, and we went to Toronto this year, and we were there when Morneau, we were at that game when he got hurt. And it didn't look bad at all. It just looked like he bumped his knee and, you know, into the other guy's knee, and, you know, he kind of walked off the field. He looked kind of dazed, but he didn't expect at that point that it was going to be a season ender, and you worry about him now about his career.
Yeah, it is strange. I mean, I got criticized during my career for getting injured in my back, but I know what it's like, and I can't understand a head injury. I've never had one, and never had a concussion or anything else. I played football, so I don't understand head injuries. But what I do understand is being on the roster and not being able to play, or maybe, you know, just not playing puts you in such a funk that it's probably the most unhappy time that you have as a player, is being on like a disabled list and not able to play. I mean, you're just miserable. You don't know what to do with yourself. You don't know what to do around the house. You have all this energy you want to give to your team and to your, you know, to your sport. And you just don't have the opportunity to do that because of either what the doctors say or how you feel. And it's a very, very difficult time. This head injury thing, though, you're right, it threw me for a loop. I thought it would be a day or two. And even the football players take a week or two off from a concussion and then get back in there. So I don't know. Obviously, he knows. He and the doctors know a lot more about what's going on. But they're certainly more cautious these days, too, than they were in the past. Shoot, back when we played, and even before us, you know, you could have a hamstring pull, but you're still playing. If you could go three-quarter speed, you're still going to be in there to hit.
Yeah.
So it's different now. They're much more careful about their careers. So they're smarter about their careers, too. Had I been smarter, maybe I wouldn't have come back after the first spinal fusion so fast. You know, I was in a body cast after my first spinal fusion for the entire off season, so I was really weak and thin and no muscle. You know, think about a body cast from your pelvis all the way up to your neck for a 5-month off season, and then I get it off right before spring training, and I jump right into spring training to play. I mean, it probably wasn't the smartest thing to do, and it probably shortened my career. So, you know, you can look back and have this or that regret, but you did what you did, and you just have to live with it.
Well, you had those back issues, what, starting in about 81?
Yep, 81. At the end of the 81 season, I had my first spinal fusion. And that's the first time I ever had back problems was in the second half of 81.
Do you remember what happened? Or is that...
Exactly. I'll never forget. I was going for a ball. Joel Matt, Dave Whitfield hit a high hopping ground ball in the third. And I dove down the line. And I jumped up really high. It was a high bouncer, so I had to jump up high. And I caught it, and then I came down really hard on my midsection of my stomach. And then I got up to throw the ball, and it was like somebody had stuck a knife in my back. And the ball, I remember, one hopped into first base, and we got him out, because I remember him cussing me out on her way back to the bench. He was all pissed off, cussing me out. And I had to come out of the game. I played, I think, one more inning. I tried to loosen it up, and then I had to come out of the game during the game. And immediately I went to the doctor, they x-rayed it, and they said, oh boy, you know, and the team doctor said, you may never play baseball again. And I go, what are you talking about? I said, my back hurts, you know, big deal. Fixed me up, and gave me a couple days off and a couple aspirin and throw me back in there. But it was much more serious than that. It was a crack and a shift in the vertebrae column of the spine, and they had to fuse it. There was no, I had no choice but to either do a spinal fusion and try to play again, or never play again. So I had no choice. I felt the Vikings doctor looked at it, and three different surgeons, specialists looked at my x-rays, and all had insisted that it was one of the worst, what they call spinal allostasis conditions they'd ever seen. So they fused it, and I saw in the papers a couple of days later, Herb Eckermann came to the hospital to visit me, and remember having to urinate in a bottle, and Herbeck and Lauder were helping turning my body over, and I was just kind of them to help me during those types of things. That's what teammates are for, right?
Yeah.
those are real teammates. So I remember reading in the paper and that during those couple of days that Castillo may not come back to play again, and I'm like, what if Calvin is quoted as saying that? And I'm like, because that's what he's being told by the doctors.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, wow, that scared the heck out of me. So I, the very next day, got out of the hospital, filled my body cast, drove to the Twins front office, and drove myself to the Friends one, which I wasn't supposed to, which was going medication stuff. And I showed up in Calvin's office, and I said, here I am. He said, I'll be ready in spring training. And he goes, what the hell are you doing here, Castillo? You know, in his grumbling way, growling way. Just wanted to let you know, I'll be there in spring training. And that was it, and I left. And so I wanted to change his attitude about not forgetting me.
Wow. And like you say, you came back and you played in 82 and 83. You probably played more games than you played at all. All
right.
The other seasons.
I was so thin from, like I said, body cast all winter. No, I couldn't do anything because you didn't want to mess up the spinal fusion. It had to, like a, it was like a healing broken bone. So they had to heal that, so I had to stay quiet, you will, you know, keep the body quiet all off season. So I had no weightlifting, no hand grips, nothing. I come to spring training, I was thin as a rail, and weak as could be, and ended up having the worst year of my career, obviously at 241 and 5 home runs, and was in and out of the lineup because of just didn't have it. So then again, I went back to the weights the next off season, and then came back and was it, yeah, and then 83, I came back and had, you know, had some more home runs and triples and doubles and hit more for power, and so I got my strength back.
And then, you know, you ended up switching to second base in 82. Was that primarily to help you with your back?
You know, I think it was fate that Gaetti came up. First of all, they wanted both of us in the lineup. And Billy Gardner was a manager at the time, and Gaetti came up as a rookie, you know, partway through the year. And he had a home run his first game. Everybody looks at me down the bench because I had a game off. And I was the third baseman. Prior to that, Gaetti hit the home run. I don't know, all of them did it. Herbeck did it his first game.
Yep.
Gaetti hit a home run his first game. Wagner hit a home run his first game with that. And everybody looked at me and said, "See you later, Cass." And I go, "Oh, geez, here we go again." So Billy said to me the next day, he said, I think we went to Kansas City after that. Yeah, I'm sure it was Kansas City. And he said, he'll do the next day or two. And he said, "Well, can you play anywhere else, Cass?" And I said, "Yeah, geez, I can play second base. That's easy." He said, "You ever played it before?" I said, "No, but geez, how hard can it be? You catch the ball, throw it to first, and you're a double play." So he said, "Give me a break. It's a, you're the third." I told him that it would be a piece of cake. So then he said, "Oh, I'll give you a shot at it." So I made some diving catches at second, made some really good plays, got a few hits, and he said, "All right, you're my new second baseman." That was it.
Interesting how that happened.
Yeah, not too scientific, is it?
No.
But like I said, back then it was a little bit more seat-of-your-pants type management, a little bit more instinctual rather than all the scientific stuff of grading players on this and that and doing percentages. I mean, sometimes you have to go with your gut.
Yeah. Well, you played a little shortstop, too, a few games.
I played a game or two, and that was just a spell of smalling. I think maybe two games in my entire life. And I never played short prior to when they asked me to spell smalling for a game at the old Met. And I said, Gene asked me, Mark asked me, I said, "Well, I've never played short, but it can't be too different." But it was, and it is. I don't like shortstop. It was too much time to think about the ball between the time you do, and you have to set yourself just right. It's a completely different setup than it is for a third or a second baseman. Third base, you just react, and you use your instincts, and you throw. Shortstop, you've got to maneuver, you've got to time the ball, you've got to get your feet set right when you make the backhanded catch, and then the throw. It's just too different for me to just take it up like that with a snap of the fingers. So I told Gene I was not comfortable, and he knew it too, because I made it two or three years, I think, the one day I played shortstop. So I never went back to shortstop again.
Did you have surgery again, or what happened after the 83 season?
Yeah, I had, not after the 83 season I didn't, but I had back problems again in the 83 season. So I was mostly on the bench the last month with back problems. And then, then following spring training, I rested the back, got my strength back on the lifting, and I started off really good in 84, hitting 400 and something with, I think a 10 or 11 game hitting streak. And then in Anaheim, I dove the home plate to slide into home, and I injured my back again. And that was the end. That was the last game I ever played, because I was in and out of hospitals with x-rays, and then they said, "You need another spinal fusion." They go, "Oh, great." So then I did another spinal fusion. Well, first I spent that whole year on the disabled list trying to do, flying all over the country, doing things like University of Miami had a back specialist, San Francisco had a back specialist, and, of course, Twin Cities had a back specialist, all over the country looking for somebody that could help me with my back, and there wasn't anybody that could do it without the spinal fusion, because they said if you get a second spinal fusion, you're done. I think they thought I would be done after the first spinal fusion. So that was the end of it then. After that season, I did get a spinal fusion at the end of the 84 season, early 85, and that was it.
So you were about 29 or 30 years old then. What were you thinking? You know, your career was over at that point, and here you are still a very young man.
I was angry and lost. I mean, I lost my, more importantly than baseball, I lost my dad, who was my best friend. I lost him during the 83 season, and it was a rough year to lose my dad and then lose my passion, lose the thing that I loved so much, playing baseball. It was miserable. I mean, as I buried myself in school, I finished my went back to finish my senior year of undergraduate school to get my degree, and then I came back to Minnesota and got my master's degree in business from St. Thomas. So you just had to bury yourself in stuff, because if you didn't, you have all this negative energy, a lot of bad things can happen.
Yeah, What have you ever thought about going back to being part of baseball at all?
Oh, I would love the game of baseball, and I love managing. I've managed my kids. I managed some of those years at the fantasy camps, and I love managing. Yeah, I really do. But when I had first gotten out of baseball, I was still a player. I couldn't see myself as anything but a player. And so even the scout, I was helping the Twins out scouting and things like that. It was just sitting for a nine-inning game. I wanted to play. Imagine.
Sure.
I love now enjoying watching a baseball game, but back then I still saw myself as a player. I'd see guys, taking a fastball down the middle that they should have swung at, and then swinging a slider on the outside corner. I'm like, hey, you guys, this is crazy. It's driving me nuts. So emotionally, it was just healthy for me to get away from the game for a few years. Probably would have loved to get back in the game at that point, but it was, I got my master's degree, and then I just started pursuing business opportunities.
And your business opportunities took you in toward the finance side of things. What about being an agent?
Sometimes that's a dirty business. You have to grovel to players, and that's not me. And players that know me know that that's not who I am. And if the ones that don't know you expect you to do it. So I could never do that. It would be nice to take care of players. There are still a few that I do some financial advisory work for that I won't name. But so I do care about how well they're cared for financially. But as far as the agent side of things, plus I think it's a very advantageous to have a law degree or to hook up with someone that has a law degree in the agency business. And it just didn't appeal to me. I've always enjoyed helping people. I've always enjoyed economics courses and math and investment courses, so I figured put the two together. I like to help people, and I like math and investments and money, handling money and doing things. So I figured being a financial advisor, that made sense to me, and it still makes sense to me.
And it sounds like it's working out really well for you.
Yeah, I've been doing it for over 22 years now, and I'm at Wealth Enhancement Group now for 13 years. And I'm a partner there, and we have a lot of fun at Wealth Enhancement. We have lots of fun together, lots of partners, and we take very good care of people, and we have a lot of fun doing it.
Well, I can testify to that, because I'm one of your customers, and I work with Justin and Chad.
Yeah, good guys.
Yeah, and they really are. When you were playing, you played at both the Met Stadium and the Metrodome. How do you compare those two?
Completely different. The Metrodome's sterile, but it's indoors. Yeah, sterile and indoors. The parts I didn't like about it was so antiseptic, so artificial, so unlike outdoor baseball that it was sickening at the end. However, the weather here in Minnesota, it's pretty tough in certain months. But having a choice, there's no question I'd rather play outdoor baseball any day of the week, even if it's drizzling and cold. I'd still rather be outside.
You remember the Met. What do you remember the most about Met Stadium?
I remember the most about Met Stadium is Craig Nettles pulling out a 16-inch metal spike, steel spike, out of the third base right in the middle of the baseball game and showing everybody. He always hated coming to the old Met. And it wasn't our groundskeeper, so we had some really good groundskeepers. Problem was that the Minnesota Kicks would play on the field, and sometimes the day before we would, and the field was chopped up. And Frank Nettles would always complain in the papers to anybody who would listen to him how terrible the Met was in the infield. And so we don't know if he planted that 16-inch spike in his glove and took it out there with him, or if he did pull it out of the dirt like he said he did. I kind of frankly think he brought it out there with him because he was a kind of a prankster. And, right in the middle of the game, he says, hey, what's this? And stopped and gave it to the umpire, who would have got a good laugh out of it. That's my memorable about the Met itself, as far as it being unique. And of course, I have a lot of fond memories as far as hitting game-winning hits or home runs, things like that. It was a tremendous amount of fun, and a lot of teammates that I played with I really enjoyed being with.
Yeah. What... I guess the next question I wanted to ask you was, you've been out to Target Field. I think you participated in what that game that they had going on.
I tried to, I just couldn't do it.
It's a beautiful stadium.
Oh my gosh, it's the best stadium I've ever seen. It's an amazing baseball stadium. There's nothing like it.
So do you follow the Twins, and then is baseball part of your life today?
I follow Twins for sure. I always wanted to see who's doing well, if they're winning or not, and all of a sudden, definitely, I'm a huge Twins fan. I don't follow other teams, and you know, I'm kind of busy doing a lot of other things, but I try to get to any game I can in the Twin Cities, and certainly if they continued on in the playoffs and World Series, I would have been part of that as far as watching and being there to cheer them on. But other than that, baseball really is out of my life. I still dream about baseball, believe it or not, all the time. And sports was a big part of my life until I was 29 years old. And to have that taken away, I think that's not a real emotionally healthy way to have to retire, you know, where you're forced to retire rather than wanting to retire or feeling like you've done your thing. You know, I did feel like I did my thing, so it's always going to be really a sore spot for me. And so sometimes it's fond memories, and sometimes it's very, very frustrating memories of not being able to. Every one of it is the dream is about me coming back and trying to get another chance to try out for the team, to make the team. And I have to hide the fact that my back is injured.
That's
nobody
great.
Knows. It's a dream. And yep. So it's just, it's a tear. So sometimes I still have nightmares about that part of it, but nothing but fond memories from playing the game.
That's wonderful. John, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. Do you have anything that you'd like to share with your fans out here?
My fans? Wow. Well, I don't think there's many fans left.
There are.
Now, or beyond the grave. But anyway, anybody that is a Twins fan, I would say thank you for your support. I would also like to say thanks to the Minnesota Twins organization for being such a